Well, good morning. I would like myself to start in by congratulating Pascal for his re-election. It's not so often this time that the French is re-elected, so. I think what is very important this morning is to see so many eminent person on the stage, and all institutions, international institutions, regional banks, to be together to discuss with you about aid for trade. It shows that the trade issue is no more a special issue apart from the rest of development and financing in the world, but that we all consider that is one of the main issue of resolving the crisis. And symbolically, I think that this grouping of people, as including Ellen Clark, who first time with us, is really a significant step forward in trying to promote trade and especially aid for trade. Let me be rather short. A lot of things already been said. The first thing is that, as you all know, developing countries have been hit hard by the global financial crisis. In emerging countries, and especially in Central Europe, but not only in Central Europe, capital inflows have dried up during the last year. Sometimes this then suddenly stops, triggering banking system distress. And so the starting point from the crisis, namely the subprime market in the United States, is far behind us today, and the crisis has little to do now with what was triggering the crisis at the beginning. But in most emerging countries, the consequences of what has started almost 2 years ago in the United States is now really disturbing. In low-income countries, the financial impact, direct financial impact, has been rather limited because the linkages between the financial system in these countries and the rest of the world were not that big. But of course, the consequences of the downturn in growth has been very important. It led to decreasing exports, decreasing FDIs, and also decreasing price commodities, not to talk about the decrease in remittances. So these spillovers are really threatening to roll back the hard-won gains of on macro stability from the last decade. Is it going to end? As you may know, the IMF is forecasting, together with other institutions, that the most probable recovery will take place in the first semester of 2010. But to address the fallout of the global financial crisis, we cannot wait for this recovery. Moreover, the recovery is the most probable thing in the beginning, let's say first half of 2010, but you're never sure. In these time, forecasts are even more uncertain than they are in other times. And this recovery can only take place providing the right policy are implemented. Everybody's talking about the green shoots and the glimmers of hope and the different signals that show that growth may come back. But a lot of things has still to be done for this, including the cleansing of the balance sheet of the banking sector. A lot has been done at the beginning of the crisis by central banks to provide liquidity, and it has been done very correctly, having in mind the errors of the Great Depression more than 70 years ago. The second line of defense has been the different stimulus which has been implemented all around the world where it was possible, where some fiscal room was available. And maybe you remember that as soon as January 2008, the IMF was asking for a global stimulus of 2%. We just know now that the global stimulus is exactly of this 2% which were asked for, and of course more in some countries, less in some others, depending of the room of maneuver of the different countries. But altogether, obviously, this coordinated stimulus has limited a lot the effect of the crisis. But the third line of defense is the question of what's happening in the financial sector. And the experience we have in the IMF of more than 100 banking crises over the last 70 years, some small one, some big one in different countries, so they're not really comparable. But if there's some constant in all those, across all those banking crises, it's that you never recover until you cleaned up the balance sheet of the bank. And this has not really been totally done. It would be unfair to say that nothing has been done. A lot has been done, but still a lot has to be done. And depending on the speed of this cleansing of the balance sheet of the financial sector, recovery will come sooner or a bit later. But let's focus on this possible recovery at the beginning of 2010. It means that if we have no complacency, if we don't believe today that everything is behind us, if we go on working hard, things are possible. What has to be done includes also trade. Trade is not only a consequence of growth, it's also a factor of growth. And obviously, what we need is that what you're doing in this institution works well to be part of the coordination of the different work we do on the financial side, on the macroeconomic side, on the development side, to try to rebuild a new kind of growth. And that's why increasing financing on highly concessional terms, in line with the Glen Eagles commitments, is absolutely essential. To avoid, in most emerging and low-income countries, pro-cyclical policy, which will follow cut in expenditures and will create problem for sustainability of debt. What are we doing in the IMF? We're not directly concerned by trade, even if trade is part of our bolster trade, health trade is part of our mandate. What we try to do is providing technical assistance, and I'm not going to repeat what Bob just rightly said, but also to provide the macro financial environment which makes recovery possible. In line with this, we just doubled our access limit to our different facility, and this has already been applied to a rather large set of countries, including Haiti, Zambia, Grenada, and at the same time increasing the support we gave to different countries under the exogenous shock facility to Kenya, Senegal, Tanzania, DRC, and others. So this means that doubling the access limits means more financing, more possibility for the institution to provide resources to our membership. The second thing was to find the resources for this, and we have secured the tripling of our lending capacity. But at the same time, most of your countries were complaining, and probably sometime, maybe not always, but sometime rightly, in saying that the way we lend was too rigid and that the IMF needs to implement more flexibility. So that, I think, has been done, and the capacity we have today to take into account much more than in the past the real political, historical situation of the countries, not only the macroeconomic figures, which of course are the core of our business, but also the environment of this macroeconomic situation, is, I think, much more developed than it was in the past. And this includes streamlining conditionality, focusing on what is critical, the conditions which are critical for the success of a program, and not including a lot of other things which may be good for the countries but has little to do with the program, as we often do in the past. And we try to do that while ensuring social safety nets in different countries, boosting them where they do exist, or creating them sometimes where they didn't exist. And it was the case in Armenia, in Cote d'Ivoire, in Pakistan, in Ukraine, where we allow more expenditure, more spending that probably was necessary just because we needed to support some social program, because as you all know, the crisis hit most the most vulnerable. And at the same time, in the coming, I don't know if I may say in the coming weeks, maybe only in the coming months, because it takes some time, bureaucracy always being a bit slow, but the general issuance of 250 billion of SDRs will be completed, as has been decided by the G20, or proposed by the G20 in April in London, and decided by the IMFC at the spring meeting. So we're in the process of this general allocation of SDRs, and it means, for instance, for low-income countries, it means close to $20 billion increase in reserves, which of course will stabilize a lot those countries. Dans ce contexte-là, laissez-moi finir par le sujet.
Well, in that context, and let me continue with the subject of our meeting this morning. As I said a little while ago, the different policies for development, finance, macroeconomic support are not sufficient today if we are not able to maintain open trade. That's something that's absolutely critical, and which involves the development of trade strategy and power in many developing countries. In each of these countries, and this was mentioned by the previous speakers, the trade can start up quite quickly as growth in these countries, once it recovers in the developed countries, and it will begin, I imagine, with the United States, and that will push the rest of trade. But trade strategies must be already in place, trade policies need to be already developed, and that's where all of Aid for Trade, I don't know how to say Aid for Trade exactly in French, but let's just say Aid for Trade and use the English expression, the various elements that comprise Aid for Trade need to already be in place. Naturally, the fact that we're coming towards the end of the Doha round is an important factor. I think there's more hope than ever now that this can be done, but this rests on your shoulders and those of Pascal Lamy as Director General. As you know, the world is looking towards the conclusion of this round, but that's not sufficient. Aid for Trade in particular needs to come and place its bricks for the foundation of a dynamic global system. It's absolutely critical. It's critical in particular for the developing countries if they want to benefit as quickly as the other countries from a return to growth. We shouldn't be naive. Some countries will benefit more than others, but they will be the ones who were better able to place themselves in a situation to profit from the recovery. And I would also like to bring my small brick to this question involving the subject of protectionism. It's often been said that protectionism is at the root of all of the evil. We all have examples that we can think of where, for political reasons that everyone understands, it's quite difficult to resist the pressure put on by one's electorate. The new protectionism that's flying in through the window when we try and hold back what is protectionism and goods and services is the new protectionism of financial protectionism, where countries have called back their capitalism from developing countries. This is a new kind of protectionism to deal with their own economy without worrying about the impact on other economies. And I have in mind a number of countries, developed countries, in which major efforts have been made along the lines that I mentioned earlier, that is, recapitalization of banks, for example, where the Minister of Finance has managed to get through Parliament significant sums for recapitalizing banks and saying to the banks, that's all well and good, but this money must stay at home. It can't be used abroad. So this is a new kind of protectionism that's more difficult to fight against and to point to, but it involves the same threats as traditional protectionism with the same negative impact. So all of that must be borne in mind. And what I wanted to assure you of this morning is that the Monetary Fund, like all of the other related organizations, are standing on the right side, not only to give whatever assistance they can to development, but as Pascal said, they're not a development assistance organization, and yet it is the very necessary condition for development. And through all these issues of trade and finance for trade, aid for trade, we've been stressing this. We haven't yet seen the final outcome, but everyone must continue to make an effort so that we can have finally our recovery, our economic recovery. Thank you very much.